You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, 7 minutes after the hour, you're on the Wake Up Tucson show. Welcome back. Christopher DeSimone, Tommy Callahan spinning the wax on the other side of the glass. We have a full house, as we'd like to say, not the TV show with the Olsen twins. We have Rocco from Rocco's Little Chicago. Good morning, sir.
Morning.
Occupying our Ron Say-like third base here in the Cubs infield. We have our Ryan Sandberg at shortstop. We have Ron Arenas.
Good morning.
Of course, here from Picture Rocks Heating and Cooling. And then Leon Bull Durham. Mark Van Buren, how are you doing, buddy?
Unbelievable. You know what I learned this morning?
What?
That ABBA is not in Tom's wheelhouse.
Isn't that crazy? Of all the things, that's not everything's
that's
in Tom's wheelhouse.
Well, I like the music. I couldn't tell you the names of the people.
The only reason I know Frida is one of them is because that's my mother's name. So,
wow, look at
there
that.
There you go. Yeah.
Frida Van Buren.
Here's a pro tip.
I like
tip.
That.
Here's a pro tip. The band name is the initials of the members' names. So that'll help you remember who's in the band.
So there's APFA?
No,
but Fried is not in there.
Is this Frieda's last name?
Anne Fried.
Oh, Anne Fried. Oh, okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you, Rocco. Now, Rocco, let's get it out of the way. Tell us your thoughts about Jethro Tull.
Well, they're... They're, pretty much a legacy classic rock band, as we all know.
Yes.
They have their radio hits. They're still spun nationwide to this day.
Correct.
On a lark, I did go to a concert, I think in 88 or something like that, at the lovely Poplar Creek outside of Chicago. Outside.
What was Poplar
Creek? Poplar Creek was like, it was a lot like... your typical bowl, like lawn. There's some seats at the bottom, and then there's a lot of lawn.
So like the Desert Sky Pavilion place up in Phoenix, kind of like that?
Maybe a little smaller than that, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Oh, Compton Terrace is what it was.
Yeah, it was Compton Terrace, yeah. But it was unbelievable, and I was not expecting how good it was.
Awesome.
So I'll give you that. But yeah, I do agree, the flautist... Mr. Anderson is a hard case. He's very self-aggrandizing, slags off band members regularly, does not come off well in interviews. But the one thing that they did, I know I posted something on the thread about Tony Iommi was in
from Sabbath. Well. Yep.
The way that Ian Anderson ran Tull gave Sabbath the impetus to actually knuckle down and practice and get their stuff together to become the band they became. Because he's like, look, blokes, we got to get up and like before noon and practice. Otherwise, this isn't going to work. So that actually kicked them in the pants enough.
I love stories like that, right? Where they see another band. So John Anderson from Yes was on the show, and when he said that him and Chris Squire went to go see King Crimson as they were touring on Court of the Crimson King, and they said, he's like, we suck.
He's like, blimey.
We got to get better.
We got to woodshed a little bit, yeah.
You own a restaurant out here.
Oh, yeah.
How's the road wars going?
It's we ran out of water. The water main was broken. I guess
you don't need water to make pizza.
And it was in that 2 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday, which isn't, if you're gonna get a water main breakage, that might be the best time.
Well, as long as you have beer, you're fine.
Yeah, we had beer, but you can't sell food legally when there's no flowing water to your restaurant, and we were like in the middle of making dough, so we had to stop doing that. But my manager went out to see what was going on, and they said there was four people looking at in a hole pointing at each other, so
waiting for the rest to respond.
Yeah, I don't know.
The city seal of Tucson, I'm sure has something flowery and beautiful on it.
Yeah,
that's the city seal of Tucson, a big hole in the ground and four people pointing at each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about the food.
All right.
First of all, you brought us a cornucopia of Rocco favorites here. Yes. The wings, sausage pizza, and a U-505.
Yeah, the classic sausage thin crust, which is, if I know somebody's from Chicago, if I see that ticket roll in, like extra sausage thin crust, that's a South Sider.
What kind of sausage do you use?
Roma Imports. Okay. Has been grinding our sausage for 22 years now.
Wow. Yeah. Look at that.
Yeah. And we get about like 9 bags. We go grab 2 to 3 times a week, and each bag is what, like 10 pounds or something like that.
That's a lot of sausage.
A lot of sausage.
Is it a Chicago thing to do ground up sausage?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Because yeah. New York, it seemed to always be, he did sliced sausage.
Yeah, that's weird to me. I never even had pepperoni on a pizza until I was like 18 years old.
Really?
Yeah, it's all sausage. Right. In fact, in Chicago, they call it, my mom's like, order a pizza. Well, what do you want? Get the combo. You know what the combo is?
What's that?
Cheese and sausage.
Thank you. So one of my favorite toppings of a place in New York I used to go to with my brother and my family was called La Mizzanetta on Hillside Avenue.
Ooh.
And they used to make this meatball sausage, all right? Ooh. And so in the back they had a little restaurant that was run by mom and the dad.
Uh-huh.
The brothers ran the pizza joint on the front, right? You literally had to take this little dark hallway in the back, and there were 6 tables in the back. It was amazing. Nice. To eat back there, right? But they would take the meatballs from the, you know, make extra for what they were doing, spaghetti and meatballs, and then just throw them in the fridge, and then when you ordered it, mm-hmm. they would slice the meatball on the deli slicer.
Oh, cool.
So then there's these congealed slices of meatball.
Yeah.
Put that on the pizza, gets crispy on the edges, kind of like a little place, little bit of heaven, as John Denver once said.
We do that too. Like, you can order meatballs on your pizza, we'll slice it up for you.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, totally.
I wasn't sure if you do on the crumbled meatball or not.
I try to, when I trade people, I try to tell them to slice it and stuff. So there may be some crumblers still on staff somewhere. But I haven't rooted, so I haven't stamped them all out. But I do try to slice them. Because, yeah, I agree. I like the little thing.
Rocco, did you have the kind of pizza parlors? Because we had one in Rochester, I remember, and it was just such a fun place to go to. You get $1.50 pitchers of beer. But the show was the guys making the pizza, because they toss it back and forth and they're spinning it up and everything.
Chicago is really? Not that sort of pizza culture.
No, I know that. I know you had the deep dish, but I mean, I used to love going to play and just watch these guys with the dough. It was just a lot of fun.
Well, in fact, most dough in Chicago, at least back in the day, wasn't hand tossed at all. Like, almost everybody had a dough sheeter, where you would just like pull.
That's with 2 E's, dough sheeter.
Yeah, you'd have like a bus tub full of fermenting dough.
Okay.
And you just pull off a wad that's approximately the size of your pizza. You run it through at one depth, and then turn it 90 degrees, and then you put it on your pizza, and like, you cut out the okay. extra parts and throw the scraps back in the the tub, you know. And that's how the thin crusts are usually done.
I don't like the dough sheeter.
No.
For some reason, there's a place in Tucson that will remain unnamed that I remember. It was said they were.
Russo's.
All right, it was NYPD on Wilmot.
Oh,
and they,
okay.
And they were dough sheeting.
All right.
And you could just, I just feel like it does something to the dough that it doesn't, when it cooks.
It crushes it a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. It works for thin crust, like if it's a cracker crust and stuff like that. But if you get any loft to it, it's not really working. The only reason I don't have a dough sheeter, to tell you, like, I had to do things because of the limitations of my space.
Right.
And I didn't have money for a dough sheeter. Those were a couple of grand. And I didn't have room for, you know, your Baker's Pride deck ovens, which I wanted to use. So I had to get a conveyor oven. So, you know, we made it work. But my pizza would be, like, slightly different if I was doing it the way it originally planned. So
one day. One day.
One day I'll ruin your dough with a dough sheeter.
Well, one day you'll get your ovens is what I was saying.
Right, right.
I think the other thing is, I think it's been, you and your crew have been very impressive to crank out the variety of menu you have at the volume.
Yeah, sure.
With, because, you know, one of the problems I see in restaurants are always these restaurants that have small kitchens mm-hmm. and who have too much dining room.
Yeah.
And it becomes kind of a mess. Takes long to get food out, absolutely. Things like that. I think you guys have done a nice job with that.
We've worked the best within our limitations. The equipment in my kitchen's 1 conveyor oven, 2 burners, like 2 burners, that's it. A char broiler and 1 fryer. That's all we got. So all the food comes out of that.
Did Guy Fieri come in and say, "You're doing this out of this place?"
Probably, yeah.
I was in a daze when Guy was here.
it was traumatic.
You're still doing your daily specials?
Yeah, we're doing the daily specials. You can see what they are on the website. They rotate around the week. We're still doing the half price to go growlers Monday through Thursday. all day long. So all of our fantastic draft beer is half price to go. Yeah, everything's going okay.
And my last thing is, I noticed you announced that you were going to, one of your distributors was going to get you Yuengling beer.
Yeah, it's not coming until the fall, but yeah, it is coming to Arizona, so.
It is. I have a friend of mine whose dad is from the Virginia area,
uh-huh.
And this is like the holy grail of beer for her, right?
It's not that great, but it's good.
I want to support. I'll see it for an advertisement.
So when I had my D&D weekend, one of our D&D buddies is from Virginia.
Yeah.
So he squirreled 2 6-packs of Yuengling on the plane,
nice.
Right? And so there I am that Thursday night. I got Taco Rustica Mexican flowing, like, here's a Yuengling beer.
Finally,
and you know, it was old style of Virginia.
Yeah, it's a little maltier than your average American lager, but
right.
Yeah. The thing about Yuengling is, it's the largest independent brewery in America.
Who knew?
Yeah, it's way bigger than you know, like New Belgium or you know, what's the one that does Sam Adams? I guess it's Sam Adams, right?
Sure,
like, yep. Those guys.
Okay,
or Sierra Nevada. It's the biggest by far.
Did Johnny Carson? I did not know that.
Yeah,
so, all right, RoccosLittleChicago.com. You hanging for walking movies?
Yeah,
awesome. Ron, are you hanging for some walking movies?
Sure.
All right, we're gonna do Christopher Walken movies with one of America's greatest actors, as we like to say, him and Matthew McConaughey.
No question. 139 credits.
Look at that. He's half of Michael Caine at 139
wow.
credits. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30, The Voice. That could be the perfect song for Tucson, Funky Town.
You know what?
Yes, Mark Van Buren.
I ran a nightclub in the Fountain Blue down in Miami.
Oh,
in
look
1980.
At you.
And
wow.
We had a
no
group,
cocaine
we had
there.
A group in, and they played this song every single night. I hated this song.
When I was in my bar world in Flagstaff, we overplayed OPP way too much. Just to tell you, it was between 89 and it was early 90s.
Well, people who go to those establishments, they don't realize it, but if you're working there, you have to hear the same thing over and over and over again. It gets a little old. So
it's like when I went to the D&D place at the Tucson Mall that has the bar in the back.
Right.
The Short Rest Tavern. They're playing all this adventurous soundtrack music, and the lady who's the bartender, I go, how you digging that music? She goes, I can't stand it. Driving me crazy. All right, Christopher Walken.
139 films. He's 78 years old.
Wow.
From your neck of the woods.
He is from my neck
he
of the
is
woods.
From your neck of the
so
woods.
So one quick Walken thing about my neck of the woods. I'm watching the Lydia Bastianovich, the Italian cook lady, Christmas special on PBS a couple of years ago, yep. Where she invites family and friends, and all of a sudden the door opens up and there's Walken. Wow.
Really?
Pignoli. Wow. Right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the hell is he doing there? They're childhood friends.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
that is crazy.
Grew up in the... Huh. This is wonderful. The cannolis. So.
His father was... They're both immigrants. His father was German, emigrated to the United States, and his mother was Scottish.
Look at that.
How about that for a comedy? And the guy's a great dancer, and who knew? It usually doesn't come from, you know, that heritage. Not to knock their dancing
abilities.
Well,
the Scots dance. They do their festive Lord of the Dance stuff, kind of
they
stuff
do
like
that
the Irish. Don't
stiff
they?
Stuff. You know, it's just like you got to move your hips, and that's usually Latin America.
What was Walken? When did Walken first start acting?
Yeah, I knew you were going to ask that. And
what's the number 10 film, Mark?
I'm not going to give you that. I'm going to give you a couple of
Walken facts.
Walken facts. There you go. He was on Natalie Wood's yacht the night she drowned. Did you know that?
That is
wow.
true.
He and Nick Nolte were both considered for the role for Han Solo in Star Wars. How about that?
No, it's true, though. Before...
All right.
I'm gonna have to digest this.
See, he just loves Walken so much.
So there's a Saturday Night Live with Kevin Spacey's the guest host, right? We'll have to have him see if he can find it, right? And what happens is it's the one where they have the different people auditioning for roles. So Kevin Spacey does a killer Walken impression.
Oh, he does.
And so they have him doing the audition for Han Solo, Kevin Spacey as Walken. And it's just the bomb.
I bet.
Kessel Run, 12 Posecs, you know what I mean? It's like the bomb. So sorry.
So
I'm not even getting to the
Alec Baldwin. Alec Baldwin and Christopher Walken both have open invitations on Saturday Night Live. anytime they want to go.
I bet.
He is a very skilled chef. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Well, and he's also a very private person. And,
so am I.
And he's a huge fan of Elvis Presley. And I'll give you two quotes.
Please.
I don't need to be made to look evil. I can do that on my own.
Wow.
And my my hair was famous before I was.
All right. Christopher Walken's first flick, first appearance, acting gig was in 1953.
Yeah.
In the wonderful John Acton TV series as Ronnie Walken. He didn't go by Christopher in those days. And it's, the title of the episode was Uncle Terrence Balances the Books. Just want to share it with
you. One of his first jobs before that gig, he trained to be a lion tamer in a circus.
Guys,
how about that?
Unbelievable. All
anyway,
right.
Just stuff you learn on this show. First one up at number 10, Seven Psychopaths, done in 2012. 83% on Rotten Tomatoes. A lot of people didn't see it. It stars Colin Farrell and Martin McDonagh, Sam Rockwell. And it's really about Colin Farrell is this struggling screenwriter, and somehow he gets entangled with the mob. And this is hilarious, but Christopher Walken and his partner are making a living kidnapping dogs and then returning them for the money. And so
I have never seen Seven
and
Psychopaths.
So what happens is Christopher Walken mistakenly steals the head of the mob in L.A. He steals his dog, and who is played by Woody Harrelson. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. So it is a romp. It's very funny movie.
And hilarity ensues.
Yes. Yeah. Hilarity ensues.
Seven Psychopaths.
Seven Psychopaths. Yes. 83% again on Rotten Tomatoes, done in 2012. The next one up. And so I want people to understand when I created this list, you know, it isn't the amount of time, screen time he's on the screen, because you mentioned earlier, he does some fantastic cameo appearances,
yeah.
Okay? And one of them is in this movie, done in 2016 at number 9, Eddie the Eagle. And for people who remember, I love the Winter Olympics. I always have, you know, I think Tom's a big curling fan back there, but I love the Winter Olympics.
Sounds like Buffalo profiling.
And in 1988, there was this jumper out of England who he was not much of an athlete, and he grew up had a lot of problems with his legs and whatever, but the English team did not even have a ski jumping team, right? And so that's what he went out for. And he really was not of the level of as most of the Olympians. But anyway, he went through all these struggles and he became a jumper. And so the movie is takes place in Calgary. And what happens is Christopher Walken.
We have about 30 seconds for this segment.
Okay. Do you want to go into the next
hold thing? That thought.
Yeah, let's hold that thought.
Hold that thought. We're in the middle of Eddie the Eagle.
Eddie the Eagle.
And we're doing the top 10 Christopher Walken movies. The one, I will tell you that I was telling about that cameo appearance I love. It's in America's Sweethearts with Julia Roberts. He plays the director of their movie. They're going to be, Catherine Zeta-Jones and Cusack's going to be. And he writes all of his scripts in the Unabomber shack that he bought on on an auction. And it sits in front of his front lawn in Beverly Hills. There's this old crappy shack. And that's where he writes all his scripts. And Walken is just magical. So
he is.
Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. All right, little night shift with the Commodores on a Friday. We got the full crew here today. Rocco from the fabulous Rocco's Little Chicago. He has a new pond that they've built out in front of the restaurant, a reflecting pond.
It's the town lake.
Town lake.
Yeah. And you have a sandwich named after a submarine. How appropriate.
Yeah. Mm.
So, Ron Arenas, Picture Rocks Heating and Cooling is here. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
And Mark Van Buren is here doing the top 10 Christopher Walken movies. Coach McCluskey at the top of the hour, and then U of A women's coach Adia Barnes in about an hour.
Cool.
All right, sir. Where are we at?
We're at number 9 on Eddie the Eagle. Just wanted to finish up with that. Hugh Jackman plays Eddie's coach in this. And he was a former Olympian, but he was a little bit of a drunk and he fell off the team. And Christopher Walken was his coach. So Christopher Walken comes in and basically delivers this great speech about how Hugh Jackman was a major disappointment. And Eddie the Eagle has all this heart and he doesn't have the talent. But, you know, it's very inspirational.
Good. Awesome.
Yeah. Good.
All right.
Yeah. And just for Tom's edification, just so he understands, to show you how he was so outclassed in this, on the 90 meter jump in the Olympics, the guy who won it was at 118 meters, and Eddie the Eagle was at 71 meters. To give you an idea, but at the end of the Olympics, the president of the Olympians, in his speech, basically said, "Some people won gold medals, some people won silver medals, but Eddie the Eagle flew with eagles."
Oh,
yeah. So it was kind of cool. So anyway, it was cool.
I really liked that film.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a good movie. Coming up next, number 8, Annie Hall.
Sure.
Okay. And everyone remembers this. And he wasn't in the movie a lot. He has some little vignettes in there. But it was done in 1977, 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. And there's this scene that is just very memorable where he calls in Woody Allen and he goes, "I got to tell you something." He goes, I have this dream at night where I basically, I'm kind of suicidal and like I'm driving and I see the headlights coming and I steer right into the headlights. And so in the next scene, they say, he can take you out to the airport. So he's driving Eddie to the airport and they're going down the thing and you see the headlights coming and you go, is he going to do it? Is he going to do it? So it's really, really tremendous. It's a great, great scene.
This is definitely one of the first where he first started coming on the scene.
Yeah.
Was this movie. So.
Oh, one of the other things that I forgot to mention, and I think it goes as far back as Deer Hunter, but he does a little dance move in almost every movie he does.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So there you go. Coming up next, done in 1993, True Romance, 93% by both the audience and the reviewers on Rotten Tomatoes. And I love this movie. I think it was done in such a way where he plays a mobster, the head of the mob, and there's this one scene that is very memorable to me where he's sitting across from Dennis Hopper and he's trying to get information on where Dennis Hopper's son is, and Dennis Hopper is not coming forth with the information, and so they go through this dialogue back and forth, and it is really intense and probably one of the best mob scenes I've ever seen.
I don't, you know what, I can definitely see Walken playing a gang leader kind of guy, but like in, you know, Suicide Kings is another one where he's playing a quote Italian mafia guy.
Yeah.
I'm not buying it. The Italian side.
I really, really liked it. And in this scene, James Gandolfini, right? So we know from
Sopranos
is backing up Christopher Walken.
Gotcha.
So it's okay. Yeah. Anyway.
Very cool.
Next one up, Pulp Fiction, done in 1994, 92% on Rotten Tomatoes, 96%. And if you've never seen this scene, it is just truly magical. And he basically is bringing a gold watch that has gone in three wars, three generations of people. So he is taking this watch and he's delivering it to the great grandson, because the great grandfather was in World War I with this watch, and then giving it to the grandfather, and then the father, and basically he's delivering it. And I can't go into all the scenes because it's kind of graphic, but he's delivering it. He's delivering it to this son, who is 11 years old. And he's telling him all this stuff about war, and then he hands him the watch, and he goes, right, "Here's your watch." And I,
you know where I put that watch?
I had to do. I was in a prisoner of war camp. I wore this watch. And so, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you got to see the movie.
As Stan Lee would say, "Enough said." All right, what's your next one?
The next one up is Pennies from Heaven. It was done in 1981, 82% on Rotten Tomatoes by the reviewers, and it takes place of the grim reality of the Depression era in Chicago for you, mm-hmm, Rocco. And Steve Martin stars as a sheet music salesman with an unhappy professional and personal life, who imagines his life could be like movie musicals that he loves. And Walken is he shocks the audience in this well, several scenes with his dance numbers. It's unbelievable. It's really, really good. It has Bernadette Peters and Steve Martin in it as well, and it is really, really good. He kind of plays this underworld guy who tries to get Bernadette Peters involved in prostitution.
And it's in glorious monochrome, too. It's
yes.
Black and white.
Yes.
So basically, this is like an ode to the old musicals,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. I think so, yeah. But there's a scene where he's dancing on top of a bar. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Really, really well done.
And those early Steve Martin movies were just great because you never knew what kind of movie they were going to be, because Steve Martin was branching out into some serious roles, but they also had like an absurdist element to them. So sure. They're really good.
Absolutely.
Well, very zany guy. Yeah. No question.
I know a lot of you just think of Steve about the jerk, but there's more to it.
Oh, my God. Yes.
You got Roxanne. You got...
And the guy's a very accomplished banjo player.
That's true. I've heard that.
With two brains. Let me burn.
Our boy Al called in. He's putting a vote in for A View to a Kill, of course. I don't think
I was going to put it on the list, and I had it on there, and then I was looking at some other ones, and it didn't make the top 10, but I would definitely consider the movie for sure.
It's hilarious, that movie.
Yeah.
It's a James Bond flick. It's not a comedy. I know. Right. I know. Between him and Grace Jones and a very old Roger Moore.
Well, Duran Duran soundtrack.
Well, that was great. That's the best part.
That's the best
of
part, for real.
And Tanya Roberts can't actually act. I mean, making Tanya Roberts a geologist is about as good as making Marky Mark a scientist in a Transformers movie.
Is that on Hulu or something? Because I need to watch this movie now.
It's View to a Kill?
Yeah. Okay, I haven't seen that since.
It's always bouncing between like Prime.
Okay.
You know the Pluto, the free TV Pluto?
Sure, yeah.
They have a 007 channel.
Ah, yeah, okay. So you can get it on that for sure.
All right.
It's out there. So.
But you know the thing about Christopher Walken that is amazing to me is he can take the littlest scenes. You know that old adage where there's no such thing as small parts, just small actors.
Uh-huh.
And there was an actor that, when I lived in Montgomery, Alabama, that they had a big playhouse there, and very well done. And there was an actor in the troupe that was just, he would take the most insignificant roles and he would turn them into the sensation because he captivated you by his mannerisms and the way that he walked around and the way he delivered. And and that's what Christopher Walken does, doesn't he? I mean, when you really think about it. I mean, he takes the littlest roles and he can just turn them into something that basically whatever you were doing, you really zone in on him.
All right, let's sneak Bunker in. We got a lot of movies to go, but good morning. We look forward to your appearances. What westerns do you have for Christopher Walken today?
Well, I've got Heaven's Gate, which a lot of people hate. I like it much more than Deer Hunter.
Oh, you're kidding me, really?
Yes.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm like walking. I've got Sarah Plain and Tall. It's a trilogy of TV movies.
Mm-hmm.
Some of his best work ever. He was natural. He was realistic. And he was just wonderful. I've got one of the most obscure westerns of all time, Shoot the Sun Down. And this has got a great cast. Margot Kidder, Jeffrey Lewis, Walken, of course. But the thing about this is kind of a combination of Sergio Leone and Alejandro Jodorowsky. And
nice.
It's bizarre, and it's great. And I'll finish it up with Milagro Beanfield War, which is contemporary Northern New Mexico, my home, and I love it.
Awesome.
All right.
So shoot the sun down. And
yeah.
It's the movie he did right after Deer Hunter.
Okay.
Wow. So, okay. I got to check that one out.
You better.
All right, I will.
Good job. Good job, Bunker, as always, man. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
All right, let's go to break. Christy Simone, Mark Van Buren, Ron Arenas, Rocco's Little Chicago. We're doing top 10 Christopher Walken movies. And very appropriate, Fatboy Slim, Weapon of Choice, one of the best videos ever. Walken dancing around an old hotel. Here we go. Cock and a walk. It's still so good. Here we go. There we go. All I know is that skit helped the Blue Oyster Cult sell a whole bunch of more albums.
Sure big, big time.
They're going to be at the Rialto, too, in September.
Are they really? Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I saw them back in Atlantic City back in, oh, God, when was that? 82, something like that.
The last time I knew they were in Tucson, someone paid for them to play a private event at El Conquistador.
Nice.
They showed up for just to do that. So yeah. I don't know how much it is to get them.
I saw them like 2 years ago at the Rialto.
Okay.
It was fantastic.
Look at that.
It was unbelievable. Maybe too many guitar solos, but depends on who you ask.
All right, mister. Well, how many more we got?
We got four to go. Biloxi Blues is coming in at number four.
We got 1986. 8 minutes to tell you.
1986, 78% on Rotten Tomatoes. And basically, he plays the drill sergeant who plays off the star on Matthew Broderick on this and really makes these guys' lives miserable. And as you alluded to earlier, you know, Broderick's walking, getting off the train and walking through Biloxi. And I know Biloxi is hot because that's where my wife is from. But in the summertime, it's really hot. And he quotes, he uses the quote, it's Africa hot.
Absolutely. So, yeah. It's like Tucson in early August.
It is a good flick. The next one up is the Dead Zone, number three.
Yeah.
1983, 89% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a Stephen King adaptation, and it is really, really good. And the premise of it is he's in a car accident. He goes into a coma. When he comes out, he has these extra powers. Like if he touches you, he can predict he knows what your future is. And in this one, he touches a politician that is running for presidential office, and he realizes this guy's maniacal, and he wants to drop the bomb or send off the missile. So basically, it's a pretty intense movie.
He's great in this flick.
Yeah, he is really, really
That's
good.
One of the better Stephen King movies by far.
Oh, I think so, too. Because I'm hot and cold on him. Some of the stuff I don't like at all. And then like this one, I really like a lot.
Natalie Wood's in that? You keep going.
Brooke Adams is in it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Catch Me If You Can is coming in at number two, 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. This movie holds something near and dear to me because I actually met the principal in this in real life. The guy was a con artist, and he basically was a doctor, he was a pilot, and he wasn't any of those things, but he was able to do this con job and really work it. And his father is played by Christopher Walken. And there's some really good scenes with he and his father together because he wants, the main character wants to get his father's approval, Leonardo DiCaprio. And it's very well done.
Still my favorite Leonardo DiCaprio movie is Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah.
Spielberg directing. John Williams does a score on this that's perfect.
Yep.
All Frank, the guy who's the main character, all of his inspiration is from his dad.
Right.
Because his dad was a grifter kind of thing, but he kept on, he got arrested or he did all these different things. Yeah. And so his inspiration is making up for his dad's failures.
Well, I asked Frank, I said, what was your greatest con job? He goes, this was the easiest one in the world to do because he had the magnetic, those magnetic numbers that they have at the bottom of checks and deposit slips.
Yeah.
So what he would do is go to Anytown USA and he grabbed a deposit slip. He'd open up an account and he grabbed the deposit slips. And then he would print his account number at the bottom of all the deposit slips. And so when the teller would put that in there, no matter what you wrote in there, it would all go into his account. So he would, after a couple of days, he goes, you know, when I'm leaving town, I need to close this account, and there'd be like over $1 million in there because all these people's things. So it was sensational. So coming in at number one is The Deer Hunter. And this movie is probably one of the most impactful movies I've ever seen. I remember watching it in 1978 when it came out, and at the end of the movie I just sat there. I was just totally blown away by the whole thing. And because growing up as a young boy in the 60s and 70s, they kind of glorified war with shows like the Rat Patrol and Combat and those kind of things. But when you realize what war really is and you look at how it's depicted in this series or in this movie, it really gets to you. Christopher Walken is with his childhood buddies that he grew up with in Pennsylvania, and they go over to Vietnam, and it changes his whole life. just his experiences over there. There's some Russian roulette scenes with the Viet Cong that are just, they get you so upset and so aggravated. I mean, like, I was just all keyed up watching the movie. It was really intense.
I was 8 years old when this movie came out, and I just remember the buzz. Like, this was the, right. the like my parents talking to their friends and their sisters and brothers and things like that about the impact that this movie had on people.
Sure.
Was tremendous.
It really was. Because it really opened up your eyes of what war really can be. And all these leaders that want to always get involved in conflicts and things like this, you know, this is what it really is like. And it's horrible. War is terrible. Really, yeah, is.
My parents would, they didn't care what we watched. So I saw that when I was about 10.
Right.
And, at home, I think we either rented or it was on TV or something like that. Which
sure,
we
right.
But that part of Pennsylvania looked exactly like where I grew up. Right. Steel mills, yep. people doing Serbian Orthodox weddings.
Right,
like it was like this was exactly my community, and like all the people they looked like the scout leaders and the dads next door, and a lot of them were nom vets, and it was just like oh.
Right. No, you're right. This is that one of those first movies. There have been other movies that have been shown the horrors of war, right?
Right.
Like the post-World War II, there's The Best Years of Our Lives.
Sure.
One of those, of course.
Yeah.
But this is the one that really graphically drilled it into your brain that this stuff is pure hell.
It really and truly
and
is.
That the Vietnam vets who are still walking around had a real reason to be affected the way they were.
No question about it.
So, well, great job today, buddy.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun. This was really, really good.
So, again, he can do very intense stuff. He does goofy stuff.
He does it all.
Looks like a total weirdo. And I also one walk-in funny one I do like. The dad in Blast from the Past. Okay, so this is the rom-com with Brendan Fraser and Alicia Silverstone.
Wow!
And so he's a scientist who always when during during the Kennedy administration, during the whole Cuban Missile Crisis, that basically said this whole thing's going down, right? So what happens is the night that they think there might be missiles, they go into their. They're in their bomb shelter. They're living in the bomb shelter. And what happens is a plane just crashes right on top of their house.
Wow.
But he thinks
right.
It's the whole nuke thing happened.
Sure.
So he locks him and his wife and Sissy Spacek, who's amazing in this, mm-hmm. Brendan Fraser's the kid, and they stay in there for 25 years. And then Brendan Fraser, as the adult kid named Adam, has to come out and deal with real life.
Modern life.
So Walken is amazing as the paranoid scientist, and Sissy Spacek is amazing as the mother who's going crazy from the whole experience. So check out Blast from the Past, Walken and Sissy Spacek, and even Brendan Fraser are very good in this. So,
cool.
All right. Guys, thanks for a nice hour of everything.
Absolutely.
Rocco, awesome. Rocco's Little Chicago. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys.
Mark Van Buren, you guys doing a farmer's market Sunday?
We are. We'll be there 9 to 1.
You're getting there. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. All right. When we come back, Sean McCluskey will be here, and then we have Coach Adia Barnes from the U of A women's basketball team. Wake up.